Whoa, okay. This one says you get a free phone if you switch. Hey, this one also says you get a free phone if you switch.
Yeah, they all do, hon.
Huh. The T-Mobile one says their customers had the lowest wireless bills versus the other big guys over the past 5 years. And their latest experience plans have Netflix included, plus a year of DashPass by DoorDash.
Mm-mm-mm. Hang on, let me see that. Oh, yeah, we're switching.
That's what I'm talking about. Do we clap now, or...
At T-Mobile, get savings that keep stacking up. That's value you can feel every day. And right now, bring your phone to T-Mobile, and we'll give you $400 when you switch.
Savings based on Harris X billing snapshots from Q3 2021 to Q4 2025 compared to average AT&T and Verizon bills. Comparison excludes discounts, credits, and optional charges. $400 with new account on qualifying line. Unlocked device credit ported 90 plus days with device and carrier and timely redemption required. Virtual MasterCard typically takes 14 weeks. No cash access and expires in 6 months. Card issued by Sunrise Banks N.A. Member FDIC. Visit T-Mobile.com.
It's America's 250th birthday, and I'm going to shop the furniture America's waited 250 years for at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, they've got ultra-comfy power reclining sofas with genuine leather seats, stylish dining sets with convenient lift-top storage, best-selling bedrooms with over 700 five-star reviews, and a feature-packed pop-up sleeper sofa with built-in shelving, charging, storage, and those signature Bob-opedic seats. So, stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/moremessy. Now's the time to get in, because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
It is the Lake Show. Steve Thompson in for Henry Lake tonight. Henry was on earlier on Drive Time between 3 and 6, and highlights of that show available at WCCRadio.com. And a quick plug. There's so much great content 7 days a week here on CCO. And if you miss something, go to the website, check out the podcast, whether it's Morning News with Vanita, Adam and Jordana, 9 to noon, the Chad Hartman Show between noon and 3, Drive Time with Jason DeRush, or the Lake Show with Henry Lake and Chris Tubbs, weeknights here on CCO. We invite, and then, of course, all the great weekend shows as well. That is WCCRadio.com. And you can catch us live or the podcast as well. Pleased to be joined by Stephen Clark from Ars Technica. He covers space flight. It's one of my favorite topics beyond the world of sports is space flight. I've been a big fan. I can remember as a youngster at my grandma and grandpa's house in July of 1969 on Maryland Avenue in St. Paul, on their console black and white TV, watching Neil Armstrong walk on the moon, and I've been hooked ever since. Stephen, good to visit with you. It's been a while.
Yes, thanks for having me, Steve. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, and let's jump right into it, the big story, and we're not going to go down the rabbit hole of Elon Musk and politics, but we are going to talk SpaceX and Starship. And they have hit a bump in the road in the development of what figures to be a game changer when it comes to human space flight and payloads into orbit and then eventually getting back to the moon and someday, as we've discussed, getting to Mars. That timeline still to be determined. But they have hit a bump in the road, and it seems to have something to do with the redesign of the upper stage, or the ship, if you will.
Right, Steve. Yeah, they've had back-to-back failures that looked remarkably similar, about the same point in flight, about 8 minutes or so after launch, you know, well after it's out of view from those watching down in Texas at the launch site, out of the well over the Gulf. And just before it, just a matter of 30 seconds or so before the engines are supposed to cut out, there's been a leak of some kind that has developed and a fire. And then what they call rapid unscheduled disassembly, or a catastrophic failure, basically, where the ship loses control, starts tumbling, breaks apart, and then scatters debris out over near the Bahamas and Turks and Caicos and north of the Dominican Republic. Those failures look remarkably similar. They occurred maybe 15 to 30 seconds apart at slightly different points in flight, but at the same basic area. And those two flights are the first two flights of this upgraded upper stage or ship with different plumbing in the engine section, larger tanks, larger propellant tanks on the ship, upgraded avionics, a number of upgrades to this version 2 of Starship, and it's 0 for 2 so far in getting to reentry, because what they really want to test is how well this thing, what they really wanted to test was how well this thing reenters the atmosphere. It also has an upgraded heat shield that is supposed to be more robust and hold up against the heat of reentry, better than the heat shield on version 1, which launched last year. But they haven't even got to the point where they could test that yet. They've had failures during the ascent portion of the flight going up into space rather than coming back.
Yeah, and Stephen, we should point out that they have had great success with the Super Heavy booster, or the first stage of this system. They've been able to bring it back successfully to the pad and grab it with the chopstick arms. I mean, it's just absolutely mind-boggling, the engineering and the expertise and what they've learned from Falcon 9. And I believe, just a sidebar, Falcon 9 had their first or 400th successful first stage landing, whether it's on a barge or on land. So they've got that part, but the ship itself eventually will carry payloads, and then at some point, humans. So they've got to get this figured out.
Yes, yes, indeed. And it's no small feat what they've done with the booster. That booster has 33 engines. Each of those engines is the size of a small car, and 33 of those clustered together, and they've had great success with those engines of late, just a couple of hiccups here and there. I think they're on the path to getting really good reliability on the first stage. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if in the next couple of flights they refly one of those boosters on a test flight and see if they can reuse it, which I think they will be able to, given their history with Falcon 9. However, the ship is the part of the vehicle, you're exactly right, that's going to be carrying people, carrying payloads into orbit, and if I had to pick two revolutionary things about Starship, one is its size. It can carry over, it'll eventually be able to carry over 100 metric tons of payload into Earth orbit. So it blows everything else out of the water in terms of capacity. And then secondly is it's designed to be fully reusable. Well, the booster, they've caught the booster 3 times now, and they may refly one quite soon, within a year or less, is my understanding. And the ship is also supposed to be reusable. So the upper stage of the Falcon 9 that we talked about, that's disposable. One of the remarkable things, in my view, that's underappreciated is on Falcon 9, they're building one of those new upper stages every couple of days to maintain that crazy launch rate that they're having, 3 or 4 launches a week. And that's remarkable, just the manufacturing capacity. But that's expensive. That's very expensive to build so many. You have to have a standing army of people, a massive factory, tooling, all that stuff. So they want the ship, the upper stage of Starship, to be reusable as well. And in order to do that, obviously it first has to get into space, which has had trouble doing the last couple of times up, and then getting back to the ground intact. Version 1, we saw several on-target reentries and splashdowns in a row out in the Indian Ocean. It has not returned to land yet. That's what they want to do with version 2 of the ship. And version 2 is supposed to be more reliable, and it hasn't proven to be yet.
Yeah, and a gigantic challenge. But ever since this company was founded, and all the engineers and all the technicians, and they'll try again. They look at the data, and as soon as they can fly, they're going to be ready to go. And it sounds like they're chomping at the bit to go again soon. They fix, and if something goes wrong, they'll do something new. And in reality, with the ambitious schedule that they've laid out in the coming years, and ultimately to send this machine to Mars, they've got a lot of work to do.
Yes. I mean, apart from what we've talked about, heat shield reliability and getting up into space, which they've had trouble with. Another one is in-orbit refueling. The Starship is designed to be refilled with methane and liquid oxygen. These are super cold pellets that are chilled down to a couple hundred degrees below zero. And, you know, the ship holds, I wish I could recite the exact number, but suffice it to say hundreds of tons of this propellant. And in order to get from orbit around the Earth out to the moon or to Mars or somewhere else, it has to be refueled. And that's both a feature and a bug, in my view, because once you're able to master refueling, it really opens up the cosmos, you know, well, at least the solar system, for all sorts of relatively cost-effective missions and exploration, including the moon, including taking people to the moon and Mars. However, first you have to develop the technology and test it, and I think that's going to be a rough road for SpaceX as well. Once they get past these, propellant or engine fire issues, I'll say, on these last two flights, once they get the heat shield understood and perfected, then it's going to be in-orbit refueling, and I think that's going to be a rough road initially. I wouldn't be surprised if they have to try that several times before they can rely on it enough to even send a robotic payload out to the moon.
Yeah, and Stephen, I know you've written a lot about that, and we don't have the time or really the ability to get into it on the radio, but that step, assuming they figure out the issue with this new version of the ship and they're able to get to what amounts to be orbit. I know they don't go on a full orbit because they want to be able to re-enter and not worry about having a gigantic piece of space junk up there initially. So once they're able to get almost to orbit and then eventually into orbit, there is a fair amount of skepticism. Can it be done, this fuel transfer and then storage in space? Because there's a lot of things. There's boil off. And like I say, you've written a lot. There's a lot to read and understand about it. But that is another gigantic leap in the step to get back to the moon or to Mars eventually.
Yeah, you're touching on a lot of different engineering disciplines Steve.
It is very daunting what they plan to do, just the fuel transfer and storing fuel in orbit.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, this stuff has to be kept at a certain temperature. If it gets too warm, it starts to boil off and become a gas. And then if you ingest that gas into an engine when you try to light it off, that's very bad. It could blow up the engine and blow up the entire vehicle, basically. And so it has to be maintained at exactly the right temperature over periods of weeks or months. And that is something that really hasn't been demonstrated. The closest thing I can think of that's been demonstrated is, if you recall, I'm not sure if your listeners do, but the Intuitive Machines lander that was a small, very small vehicle that attempted to land on the moon a few weeks ago. It is cryogenic fuel, but only a few hundred pounds of it, not hundreds of tons. And they were able to get that propellant stored at the right temperature for about a week to get out to the moon. But you have to extrapolate that to a much larger quantity for longer periods of time.
Yeah.
And then the transfer. I believe SpaceX, unless they've changed their design recently, is using pressure to transfer. There's no pump. So they will lower the pressure of one of the vehicles when they dock together, and then that lower pressure will kind of suck the propellant out of the other vehicle, sort of like a balloon. And that sounds very simple. Once the technology is demonstrated, it could be very reliable. But I think that's going to be very kind of an experimental. Suffice it to say, it'll be very experimental during that, and I suspect it'll take several tries.
Yeah, and there's got to be a concern in all of this, and we do have a break, and then we'll come back with Stephen Clark from Ars Technica, who's joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. A mishap or an explosion in low Earth orbit, is a really, really bad thing. There's already concerns about space debris, but a massive explosion at a refueling depot in low Earth orbit would be catastrophic, and that could set back any sort of space exploration years in theory.
Yes, the space debris problem, I think, is something that's underreported as well. That's you planted a great story on my idea in my head there, Steve. Just, you know, if something went wrong during this, which it very well may because it's completely new technology, you know, littering space junk in Earth orbit, you know, I think there may be some restrictions on, you know, what altitude they can do this at initially during these experiments, keep it very low. So if it does blow up, that stuff will reenter, you know, in a matter of weeks and it's not up there for years or longer. That would be a big mess.
Yeah, just a lot going on. Quick break. We'll get more with Stephen from Ars Technica here on News Talk 830 WCCO.
Whoa, okay. This one says you get a free phone if you switch. Hey, this one also says you get a free phone if you switch.
Yeah, they all do, hon.
Huh. The T-Mobile one says their customers had the lowest wireless bills versus the other big guys over the past 5 years. And their latest experience plans have Netflix included, plus a year of DashPass by DoorDash.
Mm-mm-mm. Hang on, let me see that. Oh, yeah, we're switching.
That's what I'm talking about. Do we clap now, or...
At T-Mobile, get savings that keep stacking up. That's value you can feel every day. And right now, bring your phone to T-Mobile, and we'll give you $400 when you switch.
Savings based on Harris X billing snapshots from Q3 2021 to Q4 2025 compared to average AT&T and Verizon bills. Comparison excludes discounts, credits, and optional charges. $400 with new account on qualifying line. Unlocked device credit ported 90 plus days with device and carrier entirely redemption required. Virtual MasterCard typically takes 14 weeks. No cash access and expires in 6 months. Card issued by Sunrise Banks N.A. Member FDIC. Visit T-Mobile.com.
Little Bob here. It's America's 250th birthday, so shop the furniture America's waited 250 years for at Bob's Discount Furniture. We've got ultra-comfy power reclining sofas, stylish dining sets with convenient lift-top storage, best-selling bedrooms with over 700 five-star reviews, and a feature-packed pop-up sleeper sofa with built-in shelving, and those signature Bobapedic seats. So stop into Bob's Discount Furniture or shop online at mybobs.com, where America shops for furniture.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to lowes.com/moremessy. Now's the time to get in because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit lowes.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
I'm sorry, Steve. Can you hear me now?
Oh, yeah. Back to Starship for a moment before we talk about the Artemis II mission that you wrote about. When do you expect them to try again down in Texas?
I think, or probably still at least a month away, if I had to guess, from another All right. Starship flight. And can you hear me, Steve?
Yep. Yep, just fine.
Okay, I'm just making sure you hear me. Sorry about that for the audio mix-up. I think it's still probably a month away. We haven't seen any of their hot fire testing for the booster. That usually happens a few weeks before a launch. And we also haven't seen any sort of testing at the launch site, that we see in the weeks before a launch. Elon Musk, after the last flight, which was in the first week of March, suggested that the next Starship flight may come in 4 to 6 weeks. That would put it in early to mid-April. I think mid-April is probably the earliest we're looking at right now, although I wouldn't be surprised if it's a little bit later than that.
I know when we visited last time, we speculated about Artemis II and the big space launch system program by NASA. Expensive, 100% disposable, just many years behind schedule, billions over budget. But you did a piece, and I think it's fascinating, talking about it looks as though Artemis II may fly.
Yes, I think all signs are pointing to that. We've seen, really, there are only a couple of rockets out there that, you know, it's not even a one-for-one replacement, but there are only a couple of rockets out there that could replace the space launch system and take its place and carry people out toward the moon. One of them is Starship that we've talked about, and the other one is probably Blue Origin's New Glenn rocket, which flew in January for the first time. Of course, Blue Origin is Jeff Bezos's space company, big competitor, but well behind SpaceX. And you know what we've seen with Starship the last couple of flights with the two malfunctions they had, the failures. That's going to, I think, put a hold on Starship for a while in terms of NASA's confidence in using that, turning immediately to Starship for launching people from the Earth out to the moon. Of course, Starship is already on contract to be the human-rated lunar lander, but that's only a small portion of the flight phase of Starship. You don't have to worry about launching people on it. You don't have to worry about landing people on Earth on it. So the things we talked about, the heat shield, the engine fire on the way into space, those wouldn't directly be an issue for landing on the moon, let's say. And the other rocket, New Glenn, flew in January, very successful flight. But for reasons I'm still not sure of, it seems like that rocket is not going to fly again perhaps until the very end of this year. And that's not a very quick turnaround or flight rate as they build up. Eventually they want to be flying that thing every week or two, and if not more often. And I think that's going to be a couple of years away before they even get close to that. So really, the space launch system, just to touch on politics for a minute here, Steve, I think the Trump administration wants something splashy in the 4-year term. And really the only way to send people to the moon, whether it be around the moon, which is what Artemis II is going to do, or potentially land on the moon, which is what the Artemis 3 mission is supposed to be, is by sticking with the Space Launch System and the Orion spacecraft, the multi-billion dollar disposable vehicles that you talked about, very expensive. But, if the Trump administration wants to put people at least around the moon or on the moon by early 2029, or if they want to beat China to the moon, China's aiming to land people on the moon by 2030, I think sticking with the Space Launch System for a few flights is probably the only way to do it. And the story I wrote today, the Artemis II rocket, the space launch system down at Kennedy Space Center, is coming together. They're building it. They're stacking it inside the massive assembly building at Kennedy Space Center as we speak. They put the biggest piece of the rocket, the big orange core stage, onto the launch platform over the weekend. That's a big step. So the rocket is over halfway assembled at this point. And probably will be fully stacked in a few months' time. And they're targeting a launch for Artemis II in April 2026. This program has a big history of delays, as you know, Steve. Right. So I wouldn't hold them to that. But I think it'll fly before 2029, but I'll knock on wood here.
Yeah, and Stephen, before we let you go and we run out of time, it's kind of an interesting turn of events. It almost can be directly linked to the failures maybe we've seen lately from Starship, because from those first few launches, it's kind of like, boy, they've been able to get shift almost all the way around the Earth. They've been able to bring the super heavy booster back to the pad. And now these last two failures, it really is interesting, because we had speculated that, the Space Launch System program itself and the Artemis missions, probably would have been on the chopping block had things gone in a different direction recently.
Yeah, and they still could be. It's a very unpredictable situation with the Trump administration. But just if you're thinking logically, if you know what their motivations are, the Trump administration's motivations to have an achievement that they can hang their hat on, and just know the realism of when Starship might be ready to do the job. I think the only option is to keep the Space Launch System, which costs $4 billion per mission, mind you. So that would not necessarily be popular with those in Congress or the administration who want to cut budgets. So there may be some tension there. That's why I'm not ruling it out. But I don't expect there to be an immediate cancellation. There may be something later this year where they say we're going to fly 1, 2, 3 more SLS rockets, and then that's it. And then we're going to go full commercial with New Glenn or Starship. But I suspect Artemis II will fly as intended. And, you know, that $4 billion cost, you know, there is a sunk cost fallacy argument here. But of that $4 billion, the majority of that's already been spent. You know, it's building the rocket. It's the design, all that stuff. It's, you know, the operations portion that they're getting into right now is a small portion of it. So we'll see. But, I think, you know, the Space Launch System is moving forward as we speak right now.
Well, and I invite people to check out the piece. Once again, Stephen Clark joining us. ArisTechnica.com is the website. Always good to visit with you, Stephen. Thanks so much for the time.
Always a pleasure. Anytime. Thanks, Steve.
All right. Quick break. We'll have an update on the weather. We've got headlines before we say goodbye at 9 here on News Talk. 830-WCCO. Twins win, beat the Pirates 5-1. Grapefruit League winding down. Bailey Ober, he's had a really good spring. And I like the Twins pitching going into the season. The lineup, no Royce Lewis. We'll see how they do.
No Royce, no problem.
All right.
No Royce, no problem.
Bailey Ober today, let's just get into that line real quick. 3 1/3, 2 hits, 1 run. It was earned, a walk, 2 strikeouts. Spring ERA, 1.77. Now it is spring, but you got to like what we've seen out of Bailey Ober. Once again, Twins and Cardinals open the season for real Thursday. Pregame 2:30, first pitch 3:15. There is a chance of rain Thursday and again Saturday in St. Louis as the Twins get started. But you'll hear all 162. Here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Timberwolves, they get beat. Indiana, they're kryptonite. Timberwolves, they get dumped tonight,
man,
in Indy.
This is not the time for the Wolves to be losing these games when you are on the fringe of getting a top 6 seed. I mean, last year was all about, hey, can they get home court all throughout? And it's like, well, okay, you're still a top seed in the Western Conference, and now you're very well looking that they're going to be in that play-in tournament, and that's not exactly where you want to be if you're the Wolves, with as inconsistent as they've been.
Yeah, and there's still a good chance. They're tied with the Clip right now in spite of the loss. Golden State in 6, 1 back, and then they're 3 behind the Grizzlies and the Lakers. So, but you're running out of time. I mean, there's not a lot of regular season left for the Timberwolves, if my math is correct.
You're correct.
9 to go after tonight.
Yeah, 2 losses to Indiana. And I mean, Indiana's a good team. The first loss against Indiana.
At home.
When they didn't have, I don't think they had like 3 of their starters, like Tyrese Halliburton or Pascal Siakam or Miles Turner. That's a bad loss. Now, when Indiana's at full strength, it's a different story. But then you get beat by the New Orleans Pelicans, and then you just, I mean, I don't know if the Wolves know this, but it's not a cumulative total. You can't lose to a team and then beat them by like 35 and have that work out in your favor because you still lost one. I mean, there are just some really, I think if the Wolves don't end up getting a top 6 seed, I think they're going to look back at some of these games and they're going to be like, man, we really missed a few golden opportunities because they had one of the easiest schedules in March and into April in the NBA.
Yeah, and there's still an opportunity. It is still doable. But you're right. I think going into this year, if you said, even with the big trade, when they sent Kat to New York and they get Julius Randle and Dante DiVincenzo, I still felt like even with all of that, and the change in chemistry and the fact that now it's Ant's team. He's mm-hmm. not sharing that mantle with Carl Anthony Towns, that there would be an adjustment period, but that they would be in the play-in tournament. It's a surprise.
Yeah, well, let me ask you this, Steve, because I know that, you know, we hadn't really kind of planned on talking about it here, but I just want to ask you here. Now that, you know, we've kind of see, is the Julius Randle thing going to work? Is it not? You know, what's Dante DiVincenzo's role? And then the, you know, the speculation that they made the pitch for Kevin Durant at the trade deadline. Do you now look at this season maybe a little bit differently in hindsight, no matter what happens in the postseason? Because they're going to make the postseason, whether they're one and done, I have no idea. But with the potential return of the Kevin Durant talks, do you change your mindset with the Wolves to, hey, this was a year that they really should have been more competitive and it's disappointed, to, okay, they got rid of Kat because of the contract, they're going to look at Durant? Was this just kind of a transitional year? I mean, how do you view this, or how do you anticipate you're going to view it?
I just don't think you can get into that mode when you got to where they were a year ago and fell to the Dallas Mavericks in the conference finals. It seems to me you got a couple of good players, and granted, they've been hurt, and they've had injury issues and so on and so forth. And it's a lot for Cat or Anthony Edwards to realize he's the guy with Cat gone. So, yeah, it is, in a way, a transition year. I'm not sure I'm on board with bringing in Kevin Durant at this point in his career.
Well, what are you going to – I mean, it sounds like, you know, Jade McDaniels was going to have to be part of that – part of the package. And if they weren't going to – if they weren't going to part with him at the trade deadline, they're certainly not going to part with him in the offseason. I mean, if those two guys, if Ant and J-Mac are two of your building blocks, I just don't know how you would get away from that if you're looking to get, you know, the last couple of years out of KD.
Yeah, and is it? I mean, is he at a point? He's still a productive player. I'm not going to disrespect Kevin Durant. I've always liked him. But at this point, you bring him in, it almost feels like, all right, and you got Gobert, and you got Durant, and Long in the Tooth, and
you're kind of looking like you're looking like those Lakers teams that brought in like Sean Kemp and Gary Payton and Karl Malone,
and then if it doesn't work next year, then what? Yeah. You know, you get in a really, really weird spot. I would almost rather have them run this back next year. No matter how it finishes, then you got a full season under your belt. You get the full off season. I don't know how the contract. And I think the ownership thing changed things a little as well. What's their appetite going to be as far as the luxury tax and all of those?
Well, they don't want to play. They don't want to pay it. I mean, we know we know that that's clear. And I understand that Glenn Taylor has his warts and, you know, people don't like him. And I understand all of that. Some of the business decisions can be criticized and rightfully so. I will say the one thing he was willing to do is spend money. And I understand there's the luxury tax and the second apron and this and that and the other. I just feel like you're not going to be able to allocate the resources back into this team maybe as much as they would have anticipated they were going to.
Yeah, it's just been a weird year, and at times they look like this team could be really dangerous. Just get in, even if you have to fight your way through the play-in tournament, the Timberwolves could be dangerous. And then there's other games, like you pointed out, when Indiana was shorthanded and the Timberwolves were at home at Target Center, and then 2 days, I think it was a Monday, Wednesday, and as you pointed out, the Pelicans came in, and it was just like, really? Okay, guys. I guess I've lost all faith in you. And then they come back, blow out the Pelicans on Friday night. And then tonight, they still have a chance, but it is a big advantage if you can avoid that play-in tournament. And they have a chance, but work to do. We're going to break right now so we can get into headlines. We're going to do headlines to close out the show in a moment. Steve Thompson in for Henry Lake. Chris Tubbs is here. Chris, take it away.
All right, let's get to it, Stevie T. There are reports that federal prosecutors want former Republican Minnesota State Senator Justin Eichhorn out of Grand Rapids to remain in jail before his trial for soliciting sex from a minor. Now, Eichhorn was arrested 1 week ago and resigned from the state Senate on Thursday. According to a motion filed over the weekend, federal prosecutors say Eichhorn lied about possessing a gun while accusing him of trying to help remove a laptop from his St. Paul apartment. Prosecutors also say they found another cell phone that appears to have been wiped. Eichhorn remains in the Sherburne County Jail in Elk River until space opens in a halfway house. Governor Walz is expected to announce plans tomorrow for a special election to fill the seat vacated. Among those already throwing their hat into the ring for the seat is former GOP state chair and current Nisswa Mayor Jennifer Carnahan, who announced earlier today her intent to run for the open seat following Eichhorn's resignation. Of course, Carnahan herself was forced to resign as state party chair after her close connections to prominent GOP fundraiser Tony Lazzaro, who was found guilty of federal child sex trafficking, and Lazzaro is currently behind bars.
Whoa, okay. This one says you get a free phone if you switch. Hey, this one also says you get a free phone if you switch.
Yeah, they all do, hon.
Huh. The T-Mobile one says their customers had the lowest wireless bills versus the other big guys over the past 5 years. And their latest experience plans have Netflix included, plus a year of Dash Pass by DoorDash.
Mm-mm-mm. Hang on, let me see that. Oh, yeah, we're switching.
That's what I'm talking about. Do we clap now or...
At T-Mobile, get savings that keep stacking up. That's value you can feel every day.
And right now, bring your phone to T-Mobile and we'll give you $400 when you switch.
Savings based on Harris X billing snapshots from Q3 2021 to Q4 2025 compared to average AT&T and Verizon bills. Comparison excludes discounts, credits, and optional charges. $400 with new account on qualifying line. Unlocked device credit ported 90 plus days with device and carrier entirely redemption required. Virtual MasterCard typically takes 14 weeks. No cash access and expires in 6 months. Card issued by Sunrise Banks N.A. Member FDIC. Visit T-Mobile.com.
It's America's 250th birthday, and I'm going to shop the furniture America's waited 250 years for at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, they've got ultra-comfy power reclining sofas with genuine leather seats, stylish dining sets with convenient lift-top storage, best-selling bedrooms with over 700 five-star reviews, and a feature-packed pop-up sleeper sofa with built-in shelving, charging, storage, and those signature Bob-opedic seats. So, stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/more messy. Now's the time to get in because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
The story speaks for itself. Sometimes you just don't know what to say, and this is one of them.
Yeah.
It is a sad state of affairs.
Yeah, no question.
It's just... Just,
I feel just bad. Incredible. I feel bad for his family. I really do. I feel bad for the wife. I feel bad for the kids because they didn't deserve any of this. So it's just
a brutal story.
It does. Hey, as congressional lawmakers scramble to respond to President Donald Trump's slashing of the federal government, one group is already taking a front and center role, and those are military veterans. From layoffs at the Department of Veterans Affairs to a Pentagon purge of archives that documented diversity in the military, veterans have been acutely affected by Trump's actions. And with the Republican president determined to continue slashing the federal government, the burden is only going to grow on veterans who make up roughly 30% of the federal workforce and often tap government benefits they earn with their military service. Now, most veterans voted for Trump last year, nearly 6 in 10, according to AP Votecast, a nationwide survey of more than 120,000 voters. Yet congressional Republicans are standing in support of Trump's goals, even as they encounter fierce pushback in their home districts. At a series of town halls this week, veterans angrily confronted Republican members as they defended the cuts made under Trump advisor Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency. Others are angry they've been portrayed as dead weight and cut from the jobs they felt played a direct role in helping veterans get health care. Now, although Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson advised his members to skip the town halls and claimed they were being filled with paid protesters, some Republicans were still holding them and trying to respond to criticism. Republican Representative Gus Billerickas of Florida said, "It looks radical, but it's not. I call it stewardship. It's my opinion. I think they're doing right by the American taxpayer, and that's why I support the principle of DOGE." Still, some Republicans have expressed unease with the seemingly indiscriminate firings of veterans, especially when they have not been looped in on the administration's plans. Now, two federal judges this month ordered the Trump administration to rehire the probationary employees who were let go in the mass firings. And at the VA, some of those employees have now been put on administrative leave, but a sense of dread and confusion is still hanging over much of the federal workplace.
I'm really shocked, honestly, by the confusion and chaos and all of this is created. If you want to make cuts and you want to change things, why can't you do it in a reasonable and measured way and explain it to people? I don't know, the slash and burn, especially when it comes to vets, that is not going to go over well.
Yeah, no. What I don't understand is someone who claims to be pro-military, you are out there and you are cutting these benefits and these programs that are hurting veterans, the very people that you claim you are all about. And I just don't know how, if you're in that position and you support Donald Trump and you're okay with him cutting your benefits, like if somebody was cutting my benefits and didn't look at me in a favorable way, I wouldn't exactly be a fan of his, but I will never understand that. Hey, and finally here, Steve, we'll wrap up with this. Gene testing from 23andMe said on Sunday it had filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in order to facilitate its sale after years of struggling to find a sustainable business model. In a statement announced the bankruptcy, the firm said its CEO, Ann Wojcicki, had resigned effective immediately. They said she'll remain on the company's board of directors. According to Reuters, late last year, the company said it was cutting about 40% of its workforce, around 200 employees, and discontinuing further development of all of its therapies as part of the restructuring program. In September, all seven of the company's independent directors resigned en masse, citing their frustration with the CEO's strategic direction of the efforts to take 23andMe private. Now, the company went public in 2021 and never made a profit. Now, the stock shot up following the listing, briefly valuing the company at $6 billion, and Wojcicki, who owned 49% of the company, became a billionaire. They said at its core product, an in-home DNA testing kit offered personalized genetic insights, and they also tried to convert one-time buyers into subscribers with the promise of continued feedback and personalized wellness plans, but had fallen short of those goals.
Yeah, and I wonder what happens to the data that was mined when you... I always wonder about that. What are they selling the data? Do you control it? Is there privacy? Is that data going to end up in somebody's hands?
That's what I
wonder about.
You know, Elon Musk is going to end up with it eventually. Elon Musk, I mean, we're all going to be calling him daddy by the end of this. Let's just be honest.
Yeah. Wow. That is... I've received those kits, but I've never turned them in. I've been kind of curious, but not enough to give them money.
You know what? I actually used the Ancestry.com.
Yeah.
I used it as a gift, and I actually found my biological father after like 37
years.
That's
right.
Yep.
I remember that story.
Yep. So it does work. Tubbsy approved.
Chris Tubbs, always good. Thanks. Henry Lake. He will be back tomorrow night on the program. Big thanks to you for tuning in. We'll have all the news, all the weather at 9 here on CCO.
Whoa, okay. This one says you get a free phone if you switch. Hey, this one also says you get a free phone if you switch.
Yeah, they all do, hon.
Huh. The T-Mobile one says their customers had the lowest wireless bills versus the other big guys over the past 5 years. And their latest experience plans have Netflix included, plus a year of DashPass by DoorDash.
Mm-mm-mm. Hang on, let me see that. Oh, yeah, we're switching.
That's what I'm talking about. Do we clap now, or...
At T-Mobile, get savings that keep stacking up. That's value you can feel every day.
And right now, bring your phone to T-Mobile, and we'll give you $400 when you switch.
Savings based on Harris X billing snapshots from Q3 2021 to Q4 2025 compared to average AT&T and Verizon bills. Comparison excludes discounts, credits, and optional charges. $400 with new account on qualifying line. Unlocked device credit ported 90 plus days with device and carrier and timely redemption required. Virtual MasterCard typically takes 14 weeks. No cash access and expires in 6 months. Card issued by Sunrise Banks N.A. Member FDIC. Visit T-Mobile.com.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more Messi. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to Messi exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/moremessi. Now's the time to get in because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
From high school baseball to the men's NCAA College World Series to MLB and all the way to the National Baseball Hall of Fame. How will you make your mark in MLB The Show 26? Available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.